Amen. You may be seated. Those of you that have been here participating thus far in our Healthy Church Initiative weekend consultation, I think have already have a fondness for Reverend George Fisk. He has been our lead consultant. I've had the pleasure of working with George on another consultation. But I also want to share with you, my mother, before she passed away, had started attending George's church at White Rock United Methodist over in Dallas, and she was so excited. George just brings so much to the faith. He is inspiring. He brings confidence, and certainly he brings God's wisdom to the things that he is involved in. And so it's our privilege, it's our pleasure to welcome George to share with us what God has placed on his heart. George?
Well, good morning. What a treat it's been to be here this weekend. Listen, we've been fed and taken care of like royalty. I don't know who was responsible for all the food and the goodies and coffee and everything that we had all weekend, but whoever it is, can we all thank them? What a great job. And also to your staff who've just been so kind to us, and we just had the best time in the world here. It's been quite a process now. We want you to know, if you're not up to speed on what the HCI does, what we basically do is we listen to you. And then we listen some more, and we just listen some more. And we try to reflect back to you what your heart is, what you're excited about, what you're concerned about. And so that's what this is about. It's about collecting information from you. There's been tons and tons of stuff. We have a pre-conference workbook, a study stuff that you all gave to us, self-studies that is thick. There's, you probably don't know this, but you've had over the past several months mystery worshipers who have been coming in, and they're little spies for us, and they take extensive notes on all kinds of stuff, and that's about over 100-page report that we have from those folks. So there's been an awful lot of stuff. We met all day Friday, doing private interviews with your staff and leadership of the church. We've had focus groups with your laity. We've had focus groups with your administrative board. And then yesterday, we had a workshop where we had, I believe, we had how many folks were there? 40-something of your folk were there at the workshop and just had a great time. So that's what we've been about. And so, again, we're just so thankful for this opportunity, and we hope that something really good comes out of this. We're going to read the report following the later worship service, so we hope you'll make an effort to stick around for that or come back so you can be a part of the reading of the report and the recommendations that we'll make to you. I am your lead consultant for the weekend. I'm reminded of the lady that went to the doctor, and the doctor had some really horrible news. She said, you know, you've got an incurable disease, and you don't have very long to live. She said, well, my Lord, is there anything that I can do? And he said, well, I would recommend that you marry a consultant. And she said, well, will that make me live longer? And he said, no, but it'll seem that way. So we're in a dangerous place here, my friends. There's no clock back there. I don't know how you get away with that, but you don't want to put a retired minister that only gets to preach when we do this and there's no clock. I hope you don't have lunch plans. I have met some of the nicest people, and it has been fun to meet them. And I want to introduce you now to a friend of mine. Her name is Jenny, and Jenny is the adopted daughter of one of my very, very best friends. My friend is my age. However, he and his wife started to take on foster children, and they took those that are very difficult to place. And once they had a couple of these little girls, they couldn't part with them, and they adopted them. Jenny was born from a mother who was severely addicted to alcohol and drugs and suffered the fetal alcohol syndrome. The doctors didn't think she would ever walk and would never be able to talk, and she has just grown to be such a delightful little girl. It's a real, genuine miracle. But she's a very, very special little girl, and you can see that, I think, can't you? She's a wonderful child. I remember how excited she was at her baptism. And I had the pleasure of baptizing her, and it was just a great deal. Well, my friend never served in churches. He worked with me at White Rock. But when I left there and retired, he decided for the first time, we went to seminary together, but he's had special appointments all of his ministry. And he took a little church way down south of Waco. And when they went down there for their placement, you know, like we do, he took their family down there. And when they toured the facility, they went into what would be the pastor's study. And it was old church building, you get this. And they walked in, and little Jenny went in, and she went, "It smells like God in here." And I thought, yes, indeed. That's what we are hoping in some powerful way, that everyone who walks through the doors of your church will breathe in the very breath of God, that they will breathe in and feel the presence of God, that indeed it will smell like God in here. Well, let me also reintroduce you to someone that you know very well, and that is Peter, who was named Peter by Jesus. Simon was his name. And in the fifth chapter of the Gospel of Luke, we read about his being called to be a disciple. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God. Now, you can get that picture, right? He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. Now, I want you just to kind of see this setting. Jesus is walking by the lake, and people have gathered around, right? He's an itinerant preacher. That's kind of like entertainment of their day. They didn't have movies and ball games and stuff, you know. Get a good preacher, and people wanted to hear what he had to say. And he's walking along kind of like in their world. And the fishermen that have been fishing all night pull their boats up, and they're cleaning their nets. You know, they're doing what they always do, right? It's a regular day. They're doing their chores. And Jesus kind of walks right. It's in the middle of them doing what they do. Well, Jesus then gets into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon. Now, this is kind of an interesting idea. You know, and this will happen to you. Let me just warn you. Sometimes Jesus will just walk up and he'll get in your stuff. And that's kind of what's happened here. Jesus walks up and he just gets in Simon's boat. Well, and then he asked him to put out a little from the shore. And then he sat down and he taught the people from the boat. Now, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch." And Simon said, "Well, Master, look, we've been working hard all night and we haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I'll let down the nets." Now, Jesus walks up and he gets into Simon's stuff, and then he starts giving Simon directions. And I don't know, this is not in the Bible, but I have a hunch there's a lot of stuff that's not in the Bible. Like, I'm pretty sure that Simon went, "Why don't you just go to preaching and just let me take care of the fishing?" You know, I'm sure he thought something like that. But he goes and does it. One of these really beautiful days like today, we don't have very many of these in Texas, but you know the days where it's too, it's not hot enough to turn the air conditioner on, but it's warm enough to kind of let the air in the house. And in my house there, I had opened the sliding glass doors, and I was sitting in a chair by a lamp and doing some reading, one of those beautiful days. And I heard behind me the sounds of a life or death struggle. There was a fly that was trying his best to get outside through the pane, the window pane of the window. And I could tell by the ferocity of the sound, of the buzzing of his wings, I knew what his strategy was. Try harder. That was his plan. He was going to get outside through the window pane by trying harder. Now, here's the thing. Now, I'm a consultant. I know these things. That fly wasn't going to get out through that window pane. I could see that. No matter how hard he tried, he was not going to make it through that window pane to the outside that he saw it. But somewhere in that little fly brain, he had decided that that was the only way out. I don't know why. But here's the problem. It was his strategy that was part of his own death trap. Because he was spending all of his short life's energy on a strategy that was not going to work. And soon that fly would lay there dead on the windowsill. Now I thought to myself, it's interesting. Why, I wondered, did that fly decide that was the right strategy? When only a few feet away, there was an open door. All that fly, 5 seconds of flying time, and he would have found the freedom that he sought. With far less energy expended, why in the world would that fly be so committed to doing what it had always done? Jesus said, go out into some deep water. Now, I know what Simon thought. We've been fishing all night, Jesus. We know where the fish are. We're fishermen. We know where they are. And any good fisherman knows that the fish aren't out there in the deep water. They're up here where we always catch them. We've always caught them up here. Jesus said, no, go do something different. Do something you haven't done before. Go out into some deep water and put out your nets. And so they did. Well, when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came, and they filled both boats so full they began to sink. Well, when Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. Now, when I first read this, you know what that sounds to me like? It sounds to me like that Simon's had kind of one of those come to Jesus moments. You know what? You know, we've had those, haven't we? You know, it sounds like that Simon has seen this incredible, been a part of this incredible experience, and because of that, he just falls on his knees, and he believes in Jesus. I mean, that's what it looks like, at least on surface. I do think it is a come-to-Jesus moment, but I don't think it's that kind. I might be a little more cynical, but I don't think that's what's going on here. And I'll tell you why. This is not the first time that Simon has been around Jesus. See, it wasn't like an accident that Jesus walked along the beach and out of nowhere climbed into Simon's boat. He knew that was Simon's boat. You know why I know that? Because just right before this, in chapter 4, we read this. Jesus left the synagogue and went to the home of Simon. Now Simon's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, and they asked Jesus to help her. So he bent over her, and he rebuked the fever. And it left her, and she got up at once and began to wait on him. Now, why no? Oh, Jesus, Lord, oh, I'm not worthy. Why not? I mean, he's just experienced that his mother-in-law, who was sick, just miraculously has been healed. But it doesn't stop there. Listen to what happens next. At sunset, the people brought to Jesus all who had various kinds of sickness, and laying his hands on each one, he healed them. My goodness, people from all over town now have come. What is Simon doing? Sitting in his lazy boy reading the sports page? Where's all this, oh Lord, I'm not worthy stuff? How come he's not impressed? Jesus has just healed everybody in town. And it doesn't stop there. Then it says, moreover, demons came out of many people shouting, you are the Son of God. And Jesus rebuked the spirits because they knew he was the Messiah. They came out saying, you are the Son of God. They knew Jesus was the Messiah. What did Simon do? Go outside for a smoke break out in the backyard? Where was he when all this was going on? Why no? Oh, Lord, I'm not worthy. Why now? Why on the boat? I'll tell you why. Peter. That's why. What does Simon do for a living? He's a fisherman. What does he just come in contact with here? He's got boatloads of fish. He's got boatloads of fish. He's hit the jackpot. Man, he's got more fish, more money. I can see the dollar signs are ringing up in his head. You can just see it, can't you? You can just see it. Oh, my gosh, look at this. He's got his buddies coming over. Their boats are sinking. They got so many fish. Man, he's already planning out. Where is he going to buy a new house? He's going to buy that new sports car he's always wanted. I mean, he's got it. It's ringing up. And all of a sudden, can you see it? Look at it. Pay attention. He looks over, and he's so excited. And all of a sudden, there's Jesus looking at him. And their eyes meet. Can you see it? And now it's like, Oh, Lord, get away from me. I'm not worthy. I'm a sinful man. Don't be calling me. All of a sudden, now, what's the difference? What's the difference? It's easy, see, to hang out with Jesus when you're doing all the taking and Jesus is doing all the giving. It's a whole other ballgame when Jesus looks you in the eye and you realize, now I've got to give something up. When our boys, family, when our kids were growing up, one of the favorite things on a Saturday morning is when my wife Kay would cook, we call them German pancakes. She grew up in a German community kind of thing. Her parents were of German descent, and she recipe passed on from great-grandmother, grandmother, to mother to Kay. And oh, that's just really fun. You can just imagine Saturday morning, you know, the smell of bacon in the house, and it's German pancake day. And our two oldest boys came running out one first out of the bedroom, and they're arguing over who's going to get the first pancakes. Well, Kay, you know, being a preacher's wife, saw this as a teaching moment, right? And so she says to the boy, she says, well, you know, if Jesus were here, Jesus would say, well, let my brother have the first pancakes. I can wait. And so Carrie said, okay, Darren, you be Jesus. You know, it's always easier to have somebody else be Jesus, ain't it? You know, it's always easier to have somebody else do the serving. It's always easier to have somebody else give up their time, their resources, their energy than it is me. Why on the boat? Because you see, folks, it's a lot easier to hang out with Jesus when you're doing all the taking and Jesus is doing all the giving. Well, Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. And Jesus is telling you that too, by the way. Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, fish and all, and they followed him. Now, folks, if you don't get anything else out of the sermon this morning, you got to get this. If you ain't fishing, you ain't following. That's the bottom line. If you ain't fishing, you ain't following. This whole Healthy Church initiative is about helping to equip the church to fish. Jesus was clear. This is your job. Go make disciples. Go make disciples. Go fish. If you ain't fishing, then according to Jesus, you're not following. But don't be afraid, because Jesus is with you, and Jesus will help you and teach you to fish for people. You know, one of the realities we live in is that our churches are not as vibrant as they used to be, but there's more people out there than there's ever been. There are people everywhere, and they're all around you. When I was in Paris, Texas, one of our favorite things to do was to take days and go up to Broken Bow and up to the lake up there, and it was a great place. It was kind of private, you know, there weren't too many people around, just campsites and stuff. And we'd go up there for the day and cook out hot dogs, you know, and do kind of stuff. And the kids could just run and play. They didn't have to worry about getting in trouble or anything, nothing to get in trouble with. And so one afternoon, we decided we were going to do that, spend the day up at Broken Bow. And I told the kids when we got there, you all can do whatever you want to do. They all have watches. They all know how to tell time. I said, here's the deal. You've got to be back at the car no later than 4 o'clock because I had a church meeting that night that I had to go to. It was an important meeting. And so, you know, you be back at the car by 4 o'clock. We're going to leave at 4 o'clock. Well, 10 minutes to 4 comes and all the other kids are there. Not Nathan. Well, 5 minutes to 4 come. Where's Nathan? 4 o'clock gets there. Does anybody know where Nathan is? No, I don't know where he went. So we start calling, Nathan, Nathan, where are you? It's time to go. And we all sweat, Nathan. We can't find him. We run across some other campers. Have you seen a little toe-headed kid about yay big? No, we hadn't seen him. Well, we're in the... So I finally came to a little clearing, and, you know, I sat on this rock, and I got to thinking to myself, you know, this is crazy. I've got a really important meeting to get to. I told the kids to be there at 4 o'clock, you know? What I ought to do is I ought to go off and leave. You know, I mean, all the other kids were there. They knew what time to be there. They were there. And I'm like, you know, if we left him, I got 4 other kids that love me. You know? Serve him right. So I just went back to the car, gathered everybody up. We got in the car and we left. Now, if that was a true story, I'd be a horrible dad, wouldn't I? It's not. But listen, you know, we do things that are that horrible. You know? I mean, it's like, we know what time church is. You know, everybody knows. It's not a secret. We're here. How come they're not here? I mean, we know to be here. Why don't we just close ourselves off and go? We've got each other to love. We don't need anybody else, do we? Isn't that horrible when you start to think of it, though, that these are all God's children? These are people Jesus died for. And these are people we have been commissioned to fish for. So our prayer and our hope is that through this Healthy Church Initiative, you'll be excited and energized, get some new eyes and new ears and a new heart, maybe, for the folk around you, and that somehow we can be something in the way of being the presence of God that we have. And I began with a story of my old friend Jenny. Let me end with one. One day in the car on the way home, Jim told me, he said that he had this conversation with Jenny. Dad, I'm confused. And he said, well, what are you confused about? And she said, George. And so what about George? I said, well, George said that God is bigger than all of us, right? Well, yeah, he said that. And he said, well, he said that God lives inside of us, right? And he goes, well, yeah. And she said, well, if God is bigger than us and God's inside us, shouldn't he show through? Yes, Jenny, he should. Amen.